Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hope everybody's doing well today. Today we have a very special guest on the Unimpressed podcast today. He had a show in Charlotte, North Carolina, and came down to spend some time with me. And here we are. I want to welcome comedian Andrew Kahn to the Unimpressed podcast.
What's up, man? What's up, buddy? Yeah. Like we haven't been together all day. But yeah, dude, I'm impressed with the studio, man. I'm very, very impressed with it. Very impressed with it.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy about it. I mean, I got a long commute to work every day.
Yeah. Just walk right down the steps. You home here?
I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, we've been talking about this. You coming down and had a good show. And
Charlotte will always probably be one of my favorite cities to do shows in. I mean, not just because of the people, but I love that venue. But the people are awesome. In Charlotte, man. I mean, they always come out. They show out in big numbers.
Well, the first time I saw Andrew, I saw some of his stuff on his personal page.
Yeah.
And a couple people, I think you reached out to me one time. A couple people said, you see this guy, Andrew Kahn?
Yeah.
And one thing led to another. You knew Catfish Cooley. I came to a show in Nashville, Tennessee, and saw you at Zany's. And then we hooked up in 5 years.
Yeah, it's been about 5 years we've been together.
That's crazy.
I know. It's flew by. Like, I still remember after the show or whatever, I still remember that dinner with me, you, and Catfish. We've been on the road ever since.
And now you have an opportunity to headline your own comedy tour. And
yeah.
How do you feel about that?
It's very exciting. You know, it's been a long time coming. You know, me and Catfish, we toured together for a few years. We had a good run. And you know, he wanted to try a different route in the entertainment industry. And I think it was like a perfect timing type of deal, you know. And I realized, you know, this is what I want to do with my life. Comedy is what I want to do, you know.
Yeah.
I think him splitting off and doing his own thing, I think it pushed me to want to be a better comedian, especially stage-wise. You know, so when fans and all the followers come out, they're more impressed with the stand-up than they are the videos.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's always been my premise. I want my videos to be good, but I want my stand-up to be 20 times better. You know, I just want to keep stepping up on my stand-up game.
Well, I think the timing is right. Yeah. I mean, I think I think since we hooked up, you've built huge following, close to 1.4 million.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're very active fan base,
very.
Too.
Very. Whenever I first started comedy, doing stand-up and stuff, you know, if you got 100,000 followers or whatever, you know, you want a certain percentage of those followers to be at every show. So, you know, you want your followers scattered out, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you do a show, say, in Charlotte, you get this many people. Or you do a show in Tennessee, you do this, you know, get this many people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always my premise. Like, I want to grow my following to a size that it doesn't matter where I go, I can pack the place out. That's one thing I think I will always do, no matter how big I get. I will always do meet and greets after shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I know a lot of comedians nowadays, you know, they don't want to do I like meeting people. You know, the people that's put you on that stage.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I like meeting. That's probably one of my favorite parts about doing stand-up is you get to actually meet these people.
Now, you're from, what town are you originally from?
I'm from Prestonsburg. It's
Prestonsburg, Kentucky.
Prestonsburg, Kentucky.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I tell people Prestonsburg, but I grew up in a little tiny town called Knott County.
Knott County.
Yeah. I lived on Beaver Creek.
Okay.
I lived up in a holler, Arnold Fork.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
You know, we lived in a trailer, and probably 5 or 6 miles down the road, it was one of the biggest coal mines in the county.
Yeah.
You know, so I grew up in a blue collar, like, we had one red light and it didn't work half the time type of town.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, is that a, like, the Patsy Cline type of song?
Yeah.
That's, coal miner's daughter?
Yeah. Well, that's, she's from literally where I was born.
Really? Patsy Cline is from your area?
Yeah. Yeah, coal miner's daughter, like, they give tours of that house.
Now, your mama and your father passed away.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, what was that like? What was that like growing up in a town like that?
Well, it's different, man. It's very different. Like, you know, there's a lot of close-knit families that kind of, you know, like, you got one family that takes up a whole holler, mm-hmm. and then you got another family that takes up another holler. You know, it's just like their families stick together. And like my father, he actually got murdered whenever he was 24. I was 3 years old.
Wow.
He got murdered.
I didn't realize he was so young. Oh, 24 is really, really young.
Yeah. He was 24. I was 3. Happened at a grocery store, like one of the only grocery stores in town.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he got murdered there in town. And then it was me and my mom.
Now, how old were you when this happened?
I was three. And then shortly after that, around third grade, that's whenever me and my mom and her husband at the time, we moved to Lexington.
Okay.
You know, we had to get away from those hills. You know, there's nothing there. Like, and now that the coal industry is getting shut down, it's getting more scarce down there. I mean, when they hit the coal industry, it affected that whole eastern Kentucky.
So if you live in a holler, what do you do in a holler?
Nothing. I mean, literally, like my childhood, literally, you know, me and my older brother, we would, it's called hit the hills.
Yeah.
Like we'd spend all of our time in the hills, like from time we woke up to the time that we went to bed, we was either in the creek or we was in the hills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we learned how to make our own bow and arrows. You know, we'd go hunting.
Yeah.
You know, like we didn't have no air conditioning. I grew up, we didn't have a TV, you know. So when you're in these hollers, no cell phones, like obviously, you know.
Yeah.
Like when you're in these hollers, man, if you don't figure out how to entertain yourself, you won't make it in a holler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's scarce out there, you know, but
how many people would you have in a holler?
Well, it just depends. Like in my holler, I think there was probably about 80 of us, 60 of us, you know, and then when the coal mines started shutting down, whenever that coal mines got shut down, it started getting scarce and more scarce. Like people just started moving out constantly. Soon enough, I think if the coal industry don't pop back up or some type of economy pops up in eastern Kentucky, I think more people are going to start moving to like Lexington where there's more opportunities to mm-hmm. to provide for their families, because now there's nothing down there.
Is the area pretty? Could it turn into a resort or what?
Well, I don't think you could turn it into the resort because there's really nothing to
resort to.
Resort to, you know? Yeah. All it is like hills. I mean, it's, don't get me wrong, it's beautiful down there.
Yeah.
You know, but there's just nothing there besides hills. Their means of transportation is four-wheelers.
Gotcha.
You know, you'll see more four-wheelers on the road than you will cars.
What age did you move to Lexington?
I think I was about 10. I was in second grade. I think, so I don't know what that age is, around 8, 9, something like that. And then I moved from Lexington, and then third grade, I moved to Nicholasville, Kentucky. And that's where I spent 8 years, 9 years until I was up to 16.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So now you started playing sports in Lexington?
Yeah, that's when I started getting really sports heavy. I played basketball, baseball, and football, and turned out like I was crazy athletic,
mm-hmm.
you know, from like a young age. I started concentrating on sports. Basketball, man, it saved me. Basketball, it was like, you know, I love football and I love baseball, but I think basketball, dude, that it saved me whenever I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I was going off the rails fast.
How'd you manage being a good athlete and having, you know, kind of a upside down type of lifestyle?
Oh, it was tough, man. Growing up, like me and my mom, we stayed on the road because I played basketball 365.
Okay.
Like, there'd be times like during the summer I'd have to change out of my football gear just so I could make it to the game in time for basketball.
Okay.
And whenever I was like 14 or 15, I was one out of the two players in the state of Kentucky that got offered to go to this 5-star Michael Jordan basketball camp.
Okay.
Didn't end up going. I wanted to stay and play AAU basketball, which is more travel, you know, mm-hmm. instead of going down there. Looking back at it now, I wish I would have went.
Your mom wanted you to be a comedian, right?
Yes. With me and my mom, you know, we was always close. And then, you know, me and her went through a real, like, whenever I was 16, she passed. Like, we had this tough type of love, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. of all the stuff that we went through from the time that I was 17 till she passed.
Yeah.
Like, we went through some stuff that, like, a lot of people would never believe. Like, it's like a story that you hear.
Yeah.
And then you're like, it's something like you'd see in a movie or something.
Now, how old were you when she passed away?
That was just 6 years ago. She was 6 years ago. It was literally 2 weeks before my son was born.
Mm-hmm.
She was planning on coming up because it was mine and my wife's first, you know, it was her first child.
Yeah.
And so my mom was planning on coming up and staying with us for a couple months. And then I get a call from my brother that she took a turn for the worst. And she ended up passing 2 weeks before my son was born.
Mm-hmm.
So she never got to meet him, which sucks. That's life.
And what was some of the issues y'all had together from 17 on?
But outside of like my closest friends, I don't think I've ever told anyone or opened up about it. But whenever I was 16, I came home from school and I remember my girlfriend at the time, her mom was dropping me off. Whenever we pulled up in the driveway, there was a strange man sitting on my front porch.
Mm-hmm.
And I get out, and for some reason, I knew who he was instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart dropped, my stomach sank. It was the man who killed my dad.
Wow.
Murdered my dad.
Wow.
And at first, I was like, what the? You know, like it catches you off guard. So I ran in the house. I called my mom. I was like, you know, what the heck is he doing here? My mom and that guy were seeing each other because my dad and my mom split, and that's when everything happened. Like, my dad and that guy got into a fight.
Gotcha.
And he's the one that murdered dad, but he got off with self-defense. So, fast forward to whenever I saw him on the front porch.
Yeah.
You know, she kind of told me everything, you know, about how she was seeing him before. But to me, I was a kid, you know, I was happy as I could be. And then I meet, you know, this guy comes into her life and it changed me as a human being.
Yeah.
I stopped playing sports.
Really?
Yeah, I would go months without talking. I would, you know, I wouldn't eat. And then where he was having trouble finding a job up there, he luckily got hired on at a coal mine back home in Eastern Kentucky. So we moved back. I had to move up from all my friends and everything that I knew
mm-hmm.
to move back to Eastern Kentucky in a holler in Prestonsburg. And that's when stuff started getting worse and worse and worse. he ended up going to prison. And when he went to prison,
yeah,
it left me and my mom high and dry. And I had a little brother and little sister. They went and lived with their dad.
Yeah.
And I stayed with mom. And we were homeless from the time I was 17 up to the time I was like 19.
Wow.
Yeah. Like we'd stay in our car and we'd stay at like people's houses sometimes, you know, but I would never leave my mom. You know, I could have went and stayed with one of my friends or my grandparents, but I didn't. You know, yeah. I stayed with my mom through thick and thin.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't, it was crazy. Like the rage that you get, mm-hmm. you know, like how could she do that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like how could you, like living with that man, it
like
it
he's changed. The only, yeah, like he's the only man left on the planet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like it just, it's like, it made me question everything in my life. Like, does my mom really care? You know, I stuck by her, man. You know, we were homeless, you know, for a while. And I dropped out of school and I started trying to help her financially.
Yeah.
And she got a pretty decent job. And, you know, we moved to Prestonsburg and we got us a little house, you know, and everything started falling back into place. And whenever I was 21, that's whenever I met my wife now, 22, something like that.
Yeah.
Like my wife, Brittany, you know, my mom moved back to Eastern Kentucky and I stayed. Me and Brittany got a home together.
Now you have a daughter as well, right?
Yes, I have a daughter. She still lives back in Eastern Kentucky.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How old is she?
She is a baller, dude. I think if she sticks with it, she's going to be nasty.
And what's her name?
Madeline.
Madeline?
Yeah, Madeline. Well, everybody calls her Maddie, so.
Madeline Kahn?
Yeah.
Madeline Kahn.
Yeah. She's going to be nasty. Remember that name. Dude. It's like both of my kids, it literally looks like me with a wig on. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like both of my kids are identical to me.
Yeah.
You know? Even if we're like, they're from two different women, like, they both are identical to me. And I think that Madeline, she got a lot of my athleticism. It just passed on down to her.
And then the son you have with your current wife is Jax?
Yes. Yes. Jax, he's 6. He's a stage 3 autistic.
Yes.
You know, he's nonverbal. That little dude, man, he's a lot of my eye, dude. For
yeah.
real.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, because kids like, you know, kids that can't verbalize and are autistic, man, they're so special. They're so special. They give you that special type of love.
Yeah.
You know, and when me and Brittany separated, I got him, you know, most of the time because it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm home creating videos all day and she worked.
Now, when did you, y'all had Jax, when did you start realizing he was autistic? How old was he?
Well, I have a, you know, it's a conspiracy theory, of course, but like when he started turning around 1,
mm-hmm.
You know, he could look at me and he could say, dad, he could look at Brittany and say, mom.
Yeah.
You know, and then he got the 1-year-old shot. Like the shots.
Yes.
And then that's when it started going downhill.
Okay.
Like he stopped saying dad, stopped saying mom.
Interesting.
And then that's when the autism behavior started happening.
Gotcha.
You know, like at first you think as a parent, you know, this is just normal kid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was like the older he got, because you can't test them until they get to a certain age. Once he got to that age, we tested him and they were like, yeah, he's stage 3. And the test, which I don't see how they, like a woman spends 2 hours with your kid and
yeah.
can like say what his future is going to be, because they were like, you know, he probably won't get past a 3rd grade education. It's like, how do you know that after spending 2 hours with my son? He taught me so much about being a parent.
Yeah.
So much.
So it's just you and him.
Yep.
All the time, pretty much.
Yeah, all right. the time. Like literally, like we wake up together and then he's with me all day. And then he goes and sees his mom when she gets off work. Like mm-hmm. When me and her separated, I wanted to make sure that I was the best co-parent that I could be. So I would, I drive literally 35 minutes a day to drop mm-hmm. him off. I'll go and, you know, spend a couple hours in town and then go back, pick him up, and then drive 35 minutes back home.
Okay.
So I do that every single day just so I know, you know, his mom gets that time too. And then his mom gets him on the weekends too.
And what do you, I mean, what's it like raising a kid with autism?
It's tough, but it's tough, Daddy. It is very tough. It's so hard, but it's so rewarding at the same time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's one of those type of deals because, you know, being, you know, having a kid that can't tell you, like, Dad, I don't feel good, or Dad, I'm hungry, or Dad, do this, or Dad, I want that. Now, how he communicates, you know, when, you know, I'd say every parent that has a kid that's nonverbal, they find a way to communicate.
Yeah.
And me and him have a way, like, now he can just walk up to me and look at me, and I'll know what he wants.
Yeah.
And most of the time, what he'll do, like, say if he wants something to drink, he will grab me by the hand, walk me to the fridge, pull out what he wants, stick it in my hand, grabs his cup, puts it in my other hand,
mm-hmm.
and then he'll wait for you to pour it. If he wants to watch cartoons, he'll bring you the remote. He'll go up to the TV, and he'll, like, slide, like, on, because he likes to watch YouTube. He'll want you to, like, he'll do this, like, slide it, and then when he finds the one that he wants, he'll touch it.
Gotcha.
And then you press enter. And then 3 minutes later, he comes back with a remote. Do it all over again.
Is there a study out there where it's unbalanced, right? It's unbalanced. If you're, you know, life is about balance.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is about balance, right? Mm-hmm. So there's some type of unbalance. Is there a study out there where they know where that starts? That unbalance starts? The autism starts? Or what is the trigger of that, you know?
I think that, like, where my dad passed away so early, mm-hmm. I really don't know a lot about him personally, but I know as far as me, I have, like, extreme ADHD and ADD, like, mm-hmm. very extreme. I think if I got tested, I think that I'd be on the spectrum for autism myself.
Okay.
100%. So I think that it was me that he kind of got that from.
Yeah.
And the thing is every, like, it's like two out of three kids that are autistic are mm-hmm. boys,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's real high in boys mm-hmm. than it is in girls. So I think it was, you know, kind of my genes. I mean, I don't know, you know,
yeah.
I don't know how it works.
Well, you're a highly sensitive guy. Most comedians are highly sensitive.
Yeah. Like
Is Jax highly sensitive as well?
Yeah.
Very highly.
Like, but the good thing about him, you know, he knows how to, like, let it out and deal with it as it comes and goes.
Yeah.
You know, and then people like me that, you know, that are, you know, kind of sensitive. Like, if something bothers me, I'm the type of person, I'll suppress it and suppress it and suppress it until my cat pops, you know, which is very bad to hold in that kind of feelings, you know? Yeah.
Now, your mom was the one that kind of said you should be a comedian.
Yeah.
When did you start having this urge to try this out, like, to be a comedian?
Right. Like what she told me my whole life. She's like, Andrew, you need to be up on stage making people laugh. Like, that's who you are.
Yeah.
And I was so worried about sports at the time. I was like, no, I ain't doing that. After she passed, for some reason, I don't know why. I still to this day can't explain it. I'll never know why, mm-hmm. but after she passed, I put out my first video probably mm-hmm. a month later,
mm-hmm.
and then it went viral, and I haven't stopped since.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if I put out that video to kind of as a coping mechanism, because
mm-hmm.
after she passed,
mm-hmm.
you know, because what messed me up, I think, a lot, like emotionally, is when my mom died and my son was born so quick after that. It's like one of the worst things that could ever happen in your life is your parent dying. Your kid being brought in the world should be one of your happiest days in your life. I think those two were so close together that I didn't really get to mourn the death of my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Still to this day, and it's been 6 years. And I don't think that, you know, I didn't get that joyness of having your kid brought into the world,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I think those two kind of overlapped each other.
What is your style now?
Yeah. Yeah, my comedian, my comedic style.
Yes.
Dude, honestly, that's one thing. Like, whenever people ask me, they're like, you know, if you could give me any bit of advice, what would it be? You know, because I want to be a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them all the same thing: be yourself. Only one person can be you.
Yeah.
You know, like that's like my type of my style of comedy. You know, it is. You know, with nowadays everybody being so sensitive,
yeah,
it's getting more limited and limited what you can say. Now, my stage presence, I can say what I want when I want. You know, that's more of, you know, you're going to get the full Andrew up on stage.
Yeah.
But on social media, you know, I kind of watch what I say, you know, watch how I move because, like, you know, people are so sensitive now. Like, it is so hard to be a comedian in 2022.
Yeah.
So hard. I mean, it like, you know.
Yeah.
It's getting so, like, you can't talk about that. You can't talk about this because you're scared that someone, you know, this person's going to get offended about this and this. You know, these big companies like Facebook and YouTube and, you know, if you talk about a certain topic, they can shadow ban you.
Yeah.
So no one's
Well, you know why that. You know why that is, right? The PC culture, they're PC because of who's paying the bills at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And when these sponsors are, you know, these brands or sponsors who are selling a product, they're trying to be PC to everybody.
Right.
So they can't put them, these brands can't put themselves beside someone or something that goes against that grain.
Yeah.
And because these corporations are funding Hollywood.
Right.
Right. That's a trickle down effect.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't look at it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know what you do to get away from it. You know, what do you do?
Yeah, exactly. What do you do? And I think another thing, you know, creators that have big followings.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes around election time, watch how much that their reach and their, you know, their videos, like watch how their views drop, their reach drops.
Yeah.
And it's because that they're so scared that these big influencers like me and say Catfish or whoever, just say anybody, anybody.
Yeah.
Our reach and our views will go down because they don't want us to be able to influence other people's minds and have them think the way we think, especially if you're a country boy like me.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is really big. But then again, on the like the business side of it, I agree. Like if you don't want, you know, someone to be offended because if you're offended, but then you're sponsored by Coca-Cola,
mm-hmm.
and you offend somebody, they're going to look at that brand bad because they sponsored you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
which is crazy.
Well, look at these big stars. You look at like The Rock. Someone like that put themselves in a position, right? It's good and bad. It's almost that they've kind of had to limit their voice a little bit, right? To get to the top.
Yeah.
And then if they start running their mouth, they'll knock them down a couple notches.
Yeah. I seen like a week ago, Logan Paul,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the biggest influencers on social media ever.
Yeah.
You know, he's huge. He was on a podcast and he was talking about how, like, one of the most devastating things that has ever happened to him is, like, he looked at The Rock like it was his idol, you know, because Logan loved wrestling. He loved WWE, you know, whatever, FE, whatever.
Yeah.
But he looked at The Rock like, that's my idol. And Logan even had videos with The Rock, like, on his YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Well, when Logan got in trouble for all that Japan forest stuff, The Rock's management company or publicist reached out to Logan Paul and was like, can you please take down everything that you have ever done with The Rock?
Really?
And he said, that devastated me probably more than anything that's ever happened to me in my entire career.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, somebody that you look up to so much, it's like you didn't even know him. Those videos don't exist anymore. Yeah. So it just goes to show, like, so many things, like anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting situation, right? I mean, I think people need to understand what entertainment is. It's entertainment.
Yes.
You know, look up the definition of entertainment.
Yes.
It's to entertain someone, to make them forget about their real life.
Right.
But it's almost like, because things have become so PC, you know, people want to make things linear.
Yeah.
Why do you know, if you want to be entertained and forget about, you know, if you want to laugh and forget about your issues or your problems, be entertained.
Yeah.
People should understand that.
Yeah. And I don't think, like, and this is, like, I've always thought that this is one of the biggest problems, I think, that is now, you know, for comedians is Kevin Hart said something that a fan didn't like, you know, instead of just disagreeing with that one joke, mm-hmm. they will look at Kevin Hart like he's Mr. Evil.
Yeah.
Like, I'm never going to listen to him again because he said this about me.
Yes.
He said this about them. You know, instead of just disagreeing with what he said and move on and still enjoy his comedy, you hurt my feelings, I'm going to take my ball and go home. I think that's what this world has come to.
Well, I think I'll say this. I mean, I think, I don't know, this is what I just thought of. I think if people realize that when comedians or actors or whoever it is are trying to entertain someone, first of all, realize that it's entertainment.
Yeah.
And whatever jokes or lines someone does to entertain people doesn't define them as who they are as a person.
When Shane Gillis got kicked off of Saturday Night Live because he said a joke. Like, that's, it's a joke. Like,
yes.
You know, I that is one thing that I think America is getting too sensitive.
Yeah.
We are getting too sensitive as a culture. And I think the reason that we are getting too sensitive is because we allow people to be sensitive now.
There's too many choices.
Instead of the person beside you being like, dude, get over it.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, well, I'll just jump on this bandwagon with you.
Yeah.
We'll hate this person together. You know?
Yeah.
So I think that's making comedy. You know, even Dave Chappelle said, you know, it's a tough time to be a comedian in, you know, 2022.
Yeah.
Because there's only so many things that you can talk about without hurting people's feelings.
And talking about comedy and talking about entertainment, I know you tried one movie.
Yes.
Right? And you did a great job as an actor, and I know you want to do some more acting.
Yes.
Just the people who were producing the movie, the one investor was kind of a little weird.
I pull up, he's driving a Tesla, and he hops out, and he has a pink slither up in his hair, and he jumps out, and I'm like, this dude is producing this. We should go home. Wrap it up. And then the guy that was actually shooting the movie, you know, he was a good guy.
Yeah.
But even, like, I had no movie experience. Like, I would shoot a scene, and I'd be like, I think we should probably shoot that one a couple more times so we can get it. No, we're good. We got that one.
Yeah.
And I think it shows in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and he's asked me to do more movies, and I'm like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
You know, but like, yeah, I do. I want to do a lot of acting, you know, like, I want to do movies, but I want to create my own, like, Key and Peele / Dave Chappelle show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's my end game goal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I know a lot of people want to be in movies. Like, I want to be in movies, but I want to be able to shoot my own show and have my ideas, like the way I see a skit going.
Yeah.
That's the way I want it to be. You know, me and you, I've talked to you about it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, that's something that could be in my near future. But that's my goal that I'm starting to work. Like, my 5-year goal is I want to see more of my fans. So I want to grow my following on social media. So I want to grow my shows just so I want to meet my you know, my new followers or my old followers. I want to pack places out. I want to do arenas. And even if I did arena, I don't care if there was 50,000 people there. I will stand there and talk to every person before I leave. My 5-year goal is more followers to have bigger shows. Media side of it, I want to get my show going. I mean, I don't know what it's called, what it's going to be called, but I want that Dave Chappelle type of comedy.
Gotcha.
You know, I loved it. I think, you know, I think those shows really set the tone of doing skits. Now, fast forward to 2022, some of the skits that Dave Chappelle did, we couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, whenever he was, like, the white guy.
Yeah.
He was the blind racist guy.
Yeah.
But he thought he was white, but he was really black.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't do that now in 2022. They'd burn our house down. Like, you know, there'd be a million man march if we did that.
Yeah.
I want to bring comedy back. That's my goal. I want to bring comedy back, and I want to bring comedians can say and do what we want, because at the end of the day, they're just jokes.
Yeah.
You know, like most of my videos, they're making fun of myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what I want, man. I want to bring comedy back to where we can say and do what we want and do it out of love, out of our heart, and hope to get a laugh out of it.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm excited. I mean, I think you're about to launch a new tour, new cities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's exciting. And I think that we did some great content while you're here. And I think if we can continue to do more content, what we're trying to do, we're trying to produce more content, because content is king. And I think I don't know. I think you got a good opportunity ahead of you. I mean,
yeah, because I don't care. I don't care if I even get to Kevin Hart status. Like, I don't care how big I get. I think I will always do videos, because I genuinely like doing videos.
Yeah.
I love doing comedy skits.
Yeah.
So I don't care how big I get. You will always see me posting videos on Facebook and on YouTube and on Instagram and on TikTok.
I mean, you're kind of known for that roasting guy,
too. Oh, yeah, dude. I am very good at that.
Yeah. That's done very good for
you. But what's so weird is the people that I roast, they want me to roast. Like, they ask me to roast them.
Yeah.
Like, the little food stamp and the benefits.
Yeah.
When I roast them, they want me to do that. You know?
Yeah.
They ask me to do that. Like, I got another guy. He's from New York. I don't know his name. He sent me a video, and he's been wanting me to roast him. He's got like a little EBT medallion.
Yeah.
And he's from the Bronx in New York. And he's wanting me to roast him, but I can't roast everybody that sends me a request saying, hey, will you roast me? Will you roast me? I can't, you know. But
yeah.
I just stumbled across, you know, a little food stamp. And I made them dang near a household name.
Yeah, they had a tour.
Yeah. They got a tour off of me roasting them.
That's funny.
And then, you know, I roast Wovicky. And at the end of the day, you know, I hope nothing best, you know, for the little food stamp and the benefits. I hope that they sell a million records. I hope Wovicky sells all the acne cream in the world she wants to sell. Whatever she's doing, you know. I love everybody, man. You know, I just want everybody, you know, I want the best for everybody.
Andrew Kahn's growing. He's growing. Got new content coming out very soon. Got a new tour coming out very soon. So be on the lookout for that. I appreciate you coming down.
And yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I love it here, dude. Yeah. You got me wanting to move to Charleston.
Yeah. Come on down.
Yeah. I'm about to pack
up. Back.
About to pack up and come back to South Carolina.
This is comedian Andrew Kahn, and I'm John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.